Hello and welcome to the Neurology Nuts and Bolts podcast, a podcast all about constructing your career in neurology. I'm your host, Dr. Catherine Moore. I'm a movement disorder specialist at Duke University. Today, as part of the career development series, we're going to be talking with Dr. Deborah Sinha about the exciting topic of switching subspecialties. So thank you for joining us and thank you for taking the time to speak with us today.
My pleasure.
Dr. Sinha, can you tell us a little bit about your path into your initial subspecialty and how your career has arced over the years?
Certainly. So I've been practicing for 30 years now. I started my practice in the summer of 1994 after a two-year clinical neurophysiology fellowship at Oregon Health Sciences University. So I was very interested in motor systems. I had interest in academic medicine. I chose the clinical neurophysiology fellowship after my residency because I was very interested in diagnostics and electrodiagnostics. And the fellowship I did was fairly academic, but I had student loans. And I was also interested in general neurology. I was thought I could run a practice. At the time, in 1994, the gatekeeper model was being implemented by a lot of insurance companies. And so there weren't that many neurology jobs at the time, as compared to now, where there's a desperate need for neurologists.
Sure.
So I hung out a shingle at a 500 bed community hospital near OHSU, and that was facilitated by the hospital. They saw a need for neurologists, and I began practicing general neurology, hospital based, inpatient and outpatient. This was before the hospitalist paradigm was begun. I did everything. I was in intensive care. I was in the CCU, I was on the floors, I did stroke, and I had an outpatient practice as well, neuromuscular and clinical physiology, neurophysiology. I helped with the EEG lab to improve quality. They had respiratory therapists at that time doing their EEGs. So over those years, there were two other neurologists. I practiced general neurology, I did it all. And the hospital system began hiring neurologists. They hired an epilepsy specialist who began being paid for the work that I had been doing for free for the EEG lab.
Oh,
and that
yeah.
was a bit annoying. And I think as the medical directorships were being handed out, the hospital began dividing us via silos. So there was a stroke specialist, there was an MS specialist. I started doing more movement. I had a busy Botox and movement disorders practice. It had always been an interest of mine. The hospital toyed briefly with functional neurosurgery. I was involved in that process, but they decided against it ultimately. And I did that for 14 years, and I became a mom. I was working 70 hours a week easily.
Right.
I had five employees. I had a nurse practitioner who I had trained, and it became just too much being a mom and being more than a full-time hospital-based neurologist. So I moved my practice outpatient. I became outpatient only, focused on movement disorders and electrodiagnostic medicine, botulinum toxin therapy. And I did that for 8, 9 years. I sold my practice. I had supplemented my income doing industry consulting for an insurance company and for the Portland Veterans Administration. They kept asking me for more hours. And so when I sold my practice, I became a 100% consultant. But I missed clinical medicine. And after a few years, I took a position as a supplemental neurologist with a multi-specialty group doing just electrodiagnostic medicine. So Over the course of 30 years, I've practiced general neurology, movement disorders, electrodiagnostic medicine. I've been a consultant. I'm associate medical director for Standard Insurance Company now. I was a compensation pension examiner for the Portland Veterans Administration. And now I'm a supplemental neurologist for Legacy Medical Group, as well as continuing with associate medical director for Standard Insurance. I also do some expert witness work, medical legal work, both for criminal and personal injury malpractice claims. So that's been my journey. It's been a good journey. It's been an exciting time in neuroscience, an exciting time in clinical neurology. My board certification in neurology and in electrodiagnostic medicine has opened a lot of doors for me. So I've been quite pleased with my career.
That's fantastic. It sounds like you're definitely a Jill of all trades, so to say, and have a lot of flexibility in how you've been able to pursue neurology over these years. It sounds like your interests were pretty widely based, even towards early career and in residency. Were you considering all these different types of subspecialties early on, or has it been more the external circumstances that have guided that?
Well, I think early on, I was most interested in electrodiagnostic medicine and movement disorders. Motor systems have always been
Gotcha.
interesting to me. I really like the diagnostic process. And both of those subspecialties are, all in neurology in general, the diagnostic process is challenging, interesting. I have to say, I've never been bored. I was torn between the two. At the time, there was no movement disorders added qualification board. There was a clinical neurophysiology board, which I sat for. There was the electrodiagnostic board, which I sat for several times over the years. I kind of followed my nose and my interests. When I was a generalist, I did it all. I did MS, I did epilepsy, I did electrodiagnostic medicine, neuromuscular. I was hospital-based, so really busy inpatient practice, covered the ER. And as the treatment options for MS, for epilepsy, and for stroke expanded and became really subspecialties of their own, I had to make choices. If I wanted to do movement disorders, it was hard to stay on top of MS. It was hard to stay on top of epilepsy. And so I had to let parts of the practice go as community resources and comprehensive clinics in MS and epilepsy developed. I was able to move that part of my practice on and focus on what I was really interested in, which was electrodiagnostic medicine, botulinum toxin therapy, and movement disorders.
A lot of our audience are trainees or early career neurologists. Do you think the type of career that you had is possible now?
Yes, I do. I think board certification is always valuable. And it's going to open a lot more doors than just board eligibility. So I would encourage trainees to really focus early on, towards the end of their training, on being board ready and get that board under their belt because it really does open doors. Similarly, I think fellowship training is very useful. If they have a passion for seeing certain types of patients, they like Parkinson's, if they like autoimmune disorders in neurology, if they like neuromuscular disease, getting that fellowship again is a calling card to both academic practices. It's a calling card to large multi-specialty groups as well as smaller neurology groups, because that's how hospital systems are recruiting now. They're recruiting for a headache specialist or an MS specialist or an epilepsy specialist. They're recruiting for people who can do EMGs or reading EEGs. Now, they still want people to do general neurology, but they have subspecialists so that they can develop those clinics. So knowing what you like, for your residents, knowing what kind of patients they like to see, what interests them the most about neurology is valuable information, knowing yourself and then following what you're interested in is important in developing where you're going to go with your career. And it's not like you're closing the door on anything else. I mean, in my
Good point.
practice, I did electrodiagnostic medicine and clinical neurophysiology, but I did movement disorders and general neurology, and I did outside consulting with industry. Some people know they're going to be academic movement disorder neurologists from the get-go, and that's fine. And there are jobs out there for them. You don't have cement on your feet once you make that decision. There are
That's
plenty
a
of
great way.
opportunities.
Yeah, that's a great way of putting it. And what I hear in your story too is that you are a good neurologist. And from your training, right, you have to have a good basis to start from. I think if you're too narrow from the get-go, it's would be more challenging to make those kind of switches.
Right. When I was in school, they talked about the three A's, affability, ability, and availability. And it is quite true. If you have ability and you're a nice person and you have a good bedside manner, you will always be in demand.
Makes a big
There's no
difference.
question about it.
Yeah.
And I think that that's part of training sometimes that's lacking, like that interpersonal communication, the ability to talk to patients about their disease, outlining a treatment plan, being supportive, knowing what the patient needs, maybe outside of their disease state. That's not something that's trained so much, that whole person picture.
From a practical perspective, what was the actual process of switching like? Did you feel that your community, or we've gone from private practice here to employed, was there enough support in that? Did you feel like you had enough training opportunities? Did you seek additional training?
Back in the 90s, there was very little support. There was no mentorship, there was no coaching. It was basically do or die. And so when I hung out the shingle, I made some mistakes. I had a consultant, a practice consultant, that the hospital provided to help me with the nuts and bolts of starting a practice. But really, I was left on my own for, marketing myself, shaking hands, and just letting people know who I was and what I did. And that was a bit of a struggle back in the 90s. People were worried about their revenues because of the gatekeeper models, the risk-sharing models, all of those permutations of insurance. Nobody knew what was happening. And so it was a bit of an uphill battle to bring on a new person that was perceived as taking the food out of the mouth of other neurologists. It turned out not to be the case. And eventually people got to know me and used me. I think today there are more opportunities for mentoring and coaching. And I would encourage your listeners to take up those opportunities. It would have probably reduced the number of mistakes I made early on. It may have made those early years a little bit less difficult. The whole nature of medicine has changed drastically over the 30 years that
That's
I've
true.
practiced. And getting outside expert information and help was necessary to kind of keep the practice thriving and having the practice work for me as opposed to me working for the practice.
A good point of view. Were there any surprises along the way?
When I started my career, I was surprised at how resentful people were at this woman who just thought she could do it all, do it on her own.
Yeah.
You know, there was no worries about a man doing it, but me, you know, hanging out a shingle and introducing myself and being confident in my training and what I had to offer, you know,
Right.
that I they just weren't used to it. I was the only female in the kind of neurology neurosurgery department. At the time, primary care physicians, there was a movement against specialists because they thought specialists were expensive, and
Right.
they didn't like sending their patients. You know, they'd send a complex Parkinson's patient to me with one authorized visit. It's like, call uncle. You know, there are some things that you're just not trained to do. This is one of those things. You know, there's no longer just one drug for Parkinson's disease.
Right.
So, you know, that was surprising that it wasn't, I had to educate my referral base on what I could do for their patients.
Sometimes I think that remains true as neurology has exploded with different treatment options, different ways that we approach patient care. We're still making sure people know all the things we can do to help them. I think what might be helpful is if we talk a little bit about, do you have an opinion on, are there different subspecialties that are easier to navigate between? Like you were talking about motor systems and all of that, or would there be different subspecialties that's too far of a jump?
Well, I think stroke, you know, you can be a stroke neurologist and a general neurologist. But it's hard to jump from being a clinical neurophysiologist to a stroke neurologist, being outpatient based and then jumping to stroke management. Similarly, MS care is rather complex now.
Sure.
I think jumping from MS to, say, movement disorders might be difficult. Now, it's not impossible. People go back and retrain. They do 6 months or a year. Totally a viable option. Getting extra training in something that you previously didn't recognize as an interest isn't a problem. I know several specialists who had done that. If you go to industry, I know a rheumatologist who worked 20 hours a week in industry and she decided she wanted to go back to academic practice. Well, she did a mini residency at an academic center and was able to do that. And that was later in life.
Right.
So it, you know, you're not closing the door by deciding you want to do something specific. Doesn't mean that you're closing the door on eventually being a generalist or another type of subspecialist. You just have to know yourself.
I'm really glad that you said that. I think a lot of our trainees, when we're talking to them about career planning, feel that if they commit to something, it's a lifelong relationship. And it's, I think, good to talk about the flexibility that you can forge for yourself, especially if you've had good training and, like you say, are a nice person, easy to work with. Right?
That's right.
Sorry, how would you advise a resident or early career faculty or practicing neurologist who's considering a switch or even having difficulty choosing between specialties?
I think it's important to know why you want to switch. Is it just because you prefer the community? Do you really prefer the patients more than what you're doing now? Is there a problem with your work situation that's making it uncomfortable? For example, academic centers, the cost centers compete with one another for funding. And is it because you're, you know, the publish or perish race in academics is what is really triggering your frustration? And it may be that in a large multi-specialty group or large neurology group, your subspecialty would fly without those associated frustrations. Now, so I think really focusing on why you want to move, why you want to make a change is important. And once you decide you do want to make a change, then figure out what is the best and easiest way of doing it. I know a neurologist who did a stroke fellowship, but his love was neuro-ophthalmology. And after his stroke fellowship, he did a neuro-ophthalmology fellowship. He liked stroke as well, and it made him a fantastic general neurologist. And he could focus his practice on neuro-ophthalmology, but also participate in stroke. And that's very valuable.
The more training you get, the better you're going to be. Sometimes it's hard to know when to
Possibly.
when it's time to say
Possibly.
I've got enough formal training, right?
You're in neurology, you're the universe, you're the lifetime student anyway. Most people
Absolutely.
aren't starting their careers until they're 32. I didn't start my practice until I was 34 years old. And most people who get a college education and then maybe get a master's, they're starting their careers at 24, 25. We're 10 years later. You can have it all. You can be a mom. You can have a family. You can have a career, but you have to be careful about what you're saying yes to.
If you have anything else you want to share with our listeners before we wrap up today?
And I am open to people reaching out and talking about this kind of stuff, because no one was talking about this when I was doing it. I'm repeating myself, I know, but neurology has opened a lot of doors. And board certification is mandatory to open all of those doors.
Good point. Well said. Well said. And thank you so much for joining us today. I
Sure.
really appreciate your insight. Neurology Nuts and Bolts podcast was created and produced by Sarah Schaefer. It is not recorded as an official podcast of any institution or organization. The podcast is unfunded. Opinions are those of the individual participants. Music by Audrey Nath. Artwork by Shivani Ghoshal. Want more content like this? Be sure to subscribe to Neurology Nuts and Bolts podcast wherever you get your podcasts to hear more about constructing your career in neurology. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Neurology Nuts and Bolts to stay up to date on new content and give us feedback on what you want to hear. Tell your friends, and thank you for joining us.